From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, the Great Basin Water Network's Steve Erickson on the pipeline Nevada wants to build from the Utah border.
We just don't believe that there's enough water to fill that pipe and satisfy Las Vegas, that what they're doing, in essence, is taking a bet on a short-term fix for a problem that really is a long-term problem they need to address.
Also, an investigation into a University of Utah swim coach and a local news summary. All that and more just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. Thanks for tuning in to The Rundown, a news and information show where we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas. I'm Roger McDonough. Later in the program, a conversation with Steve Erickson of the Great Basin Water Network on the ongoing dispute between Utah and Nevada over a system of aquifers along the state's shared border. But before that, a summary of today's local news. First up, the operators of a coal-fired power plant in eastern Utah have agreed to pay $35,000 to settle air pollution violations with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA says the Bonanza power plant was at times releasing too much exhaust. Officials say operators were bypassing a fabric filter system during smoky startups and shutdowns, apparently to extend the life of the filters. The filter system is now in use at all times of operation. As part of the settlement, the operators of the plant also agreed to spend $260,000 to replace five maintenance trucks with models powered by cleaner-burning natural gas. The Deseret Generation and Transmission Cooperative operates the Bonanza plant within the Uinta and Ouray Indian Reservation near Vernal, Utah. And in other news, a report was released Tuesday detailing the findings of an investigation into Greg Winslow, a swimming and diving coach who was fired from the University of Utah after allegations of abuse and sexual misconduct came to light. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky brings us this story.
An independent investigation of University of Utah swimming coach Greg Winslow has been released. The investigators found no significant evidence of physical abuse, inappropriate sexual relations, or racial discrimination. However, they did find that Winslow engaged in psychological abuse of some team members from 2007 until 2009. Alan Sullivan was one of the three investigators that produced the report.
Winslow demonstrated a shocking lack of empathy for swimmers with physical or psychological limitations. He traumatized swimmers who told us years after they left the team that they still live with the consequences.
Sullivan says while their findings of psychological abuse are subjective because the line between motivation and abuse are different for different athletes, most of the swimmers and coaches interviewed said that Winslow was psychologically manipulative and frequently attempted to motivate through intimidation and fear. The report says University of Utah administrators responded appropriately to the situation by formulating a letter of expectations, establishing a monitoring program, and reviewing outcomes with Winslow. The psychological abuse appears to have stopped after this intervention.
We think the athletics department did a good job of addressing the situation in 2009. But we do not believe that the athletics department adequately addressed Winslow's excessive use of alcohol. His use of alcohol had a corrosive effect on the team. It impaired his coaching. It interfered with effective discipline. It was an embarrassment to the team and the university.
In one incident in July of 2011, Coach Winslow and assistant coach Charlie King got into a dispute outside of a bar. Winslow assaulted King, beating him while on the ground, and was finally pulled off by passersby. While Winslow did seek alcohol abuse treatment after this incident, it was apparently unsuccessful, and the investigators felt that administrators did not follow up appropriately.
The reality is that no one supervised his treatment, no one held him accountable for a treatment program, no one from the athletics department followed up or monitored him.
Much of the blame was placed by the investigators on Winslow's direct supervisor, Associate Director of Athletics Pete Olechek, and on the Director of Athletics Chris Hill. Olechek left the university in October of 2012. Hill says he regrets that he failed to follow up on an email received from Olechek about the altercation.
And that was a red flag. There's no question that at that point in time, I should have had him define what an altercation is, I should have brought the people and talked to him, and I should either fired the coach or suspended him to find out more, and as a university employee, put him in some kind of program.
The report had a number of recommendations to avoid similar situations in the future, including creating standards for safe and effective coaching methods, reporting of abusive coaching practices, and rules for substance abuse. University President David Pershing says they will also develop pathways for student athletes to report directly to his office or to the dean of students in order for students to have options outside of the athletics department.
After thoroughly reviewing this report, it is clear that the university did not do what it should have to support our students. Some swimmers had a good experience with Coach Winslow, but many others did not. And I want to apologize to our swimmers who did not have a good experience, and I pledge to our student athletes that we will learn from our past mistakes.
Criminal charges of sexual abuse of a minor against Winslow were recently dropped in Arizona. Chris Hill will retain his job as director of athletics. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
A black bear died in custody of state wildlife officials on Tuesday, apparently from a dose of tranquilizer. The Deseret News reports that officials darted the bear as part of a study that's using tracking collars to understand how sows and their cubs are struggling with little food in hot weather this summer. The operation on Tuesday didn't go as planned. The bear, which was darted outside of Camas, was a male. Wildlife officials were looking to capture only females, which are wearing the tracking devices. Officials administered an antidote to wake the bear, but they say it stopped breathing. Division of Wildlife Resources biologist Karen DeBlewis says that this was the first death of an animal captured by state officials in more than 14 years. And finally today, the nation's largest American Indian reservation is awash in extreme drought, and that has forced its leaders to declare an emergency. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley signed the emergency declaration Monday, along with a memorandum directing all executive branch agencies to develop plans for responding to the drought and educating the public about the effects. Over the last month, drought conditions on the Navajo Nation, from the tribe's lands in southeastern Utah to New Mexico and Arizona, have worsened. Some areas have seen just over one-third of their normal precipitation this year. Shelley says the land is dry and wells aren't producing water the way they have in the past. The declaration makes available emergency funds for Navajo communities and clears the way for the tribe to seek a federal disaster declaration. That's the local news summary. You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. And now we turn to a conversation with Steve Erickson of the Great Basin Water Network. For several years, the network has been fighting to stop the development of a pipeline from Utah's Snake Valley to Las Vegas. Utah Governor Gary Herbert announced in April that he wouldn't sign an agreement and give his go-ahead for the pipeline. Herbert reiterated this position recently, but Erickson says that isn't the end of the story, not by a long shot. On Tuesday of last week, Governor Gary Herbert sent a letter back to the State Water Development Commission saying that he would not reconsider his decision to not sign the Utah-Nevada water sharing agreement. Can you tell me a little bit about that and where we stand as far as the agreement goes?
Yes, the governor made the right decision here, and he listened to the people of Snake Valley. He listened to the people of Utah, all of whom seemed to understand that this was not a deal that was in Utah's best interest, that there was no urgency to cut a deal on the water in Snake Valley, that there were insufficient protections for the water rights holders and for the environment in Snake Valley, and that the division of the water in the valley was grossly unfair and tilted towards southern Nevada water. This is a desert. There isn't any surplus water there to be had. So why are we so intent upon letting Nevada take it?
Hey, and so tell me a little bit about the agreement in general. I know that the Southern Nevada Water Authority was trying to get access to, 21 billion gallons of water to help quench the needs, I guess, of Las Vegas. Tell me a little bit about the agreement in general or what the background is here.
The agreement was a requirement by Congress that was language inserted into the Lincoln County Conservation, Recreation, and Development Act, or LCRDA, by Senator Bennett. And it requires that before any export of water from Snake Valley can take place, that there be an agreement between the states on the division of the groundwater flow in the region. It's not simply restricted to Snake Valley, but it deals with the greater groundwater flow system in the area. So the Southern Nevada Water and the state of Nevada feel very compelled to achieve this agreement so that they can move forward with their pipeline project. So having an agreement opens the door for the pipeline to go forward. Without the agreement, the pipeline is still not approved. So at some point, there will have to be some kind of agreement if any water is to be moved out of Snake Valley. Now, at the same time, you've got this process ongoing, a couple of other processes going on, one of which is the Bureau of Land Management's environmental impact process. That's concluded now, and they've issued a record decision allowing right-of-way for the pipeline, a corridor where that pipeline and all the associated power that goes with it can be built.
Who did they give that right-of-way to?
They gave that right-of-way to the Southern Nevada Water Authority to move forward with the project, but they did not give that right-of-way into Snake Valley. So right now, there's no right-of-way in Snake Valley. Therefore, they can't export water. In fact, they don't have any water rights. Southern Nevada Water Authority does not have water rights in Snake Valley. They have to reissue their request for that appropriation. They'll have to go through a hearing process, a public review process, and likely a legal process. So we're still a long ways away on just the means of conveyance and the water rights in the first place being the number one thing. There's also a legal process that's unfolding with the previous award of water rights in these other Nevada valleys, and there will soon be a lawsuit filed by a number of organizations, including Great Basin Water Network, to challenge the record of decision by the BLM. So there's lots going on this that has to play out before we're feeling compelled to move forward with any kind of agreement.
Are all of these aquifers tied together? I mean, there's the Snake Valley Aquifer. There are the aquifers that are also along the Utah-Nevada line stretching further south. And you guys have litigation going on there. But before I jump into that question, are those all connected, those aquifers?
Well, it's a question that's a scientific interest and legal dispute, but we believe it is the consensus of the science that's been done that there is, in fact, significant interbasin flow, specifically from Spring Valley to Snake Valley. Now, that water in Spring Valley kind of flows south underground and then turns the corner around the Snake Range, which is the home of Great Basin National Park, and it heads back north and flows into the Great Salt Lake Basin. And so this groundwater essentially underlies the Great Salt Lake when it reaches its lowest point. There are three other valleys that are in dispute now with the water rights, and that's Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar valleys. Those valleys, the underground flow is towards the Colorado River. So it joins up with what's called the White River system and flows down into Lake Mead. So what we've argued in court is that the water rights that Southern Nevada wants in Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar Valley, which they have approved by the state engineer, that those water rights shouldn't be granted because that water is already appropriated down gradient. It's already being used in valleys to the south where that water comes up as springs and seeps and supports a couple of wildlife refuges and some ranching and farming. In other words, this water's already been allocated, shouldn't be allocated twice.
So, Steve, while the governor has refused to sign an agreement that would give Nevada access to the Snake Valley Aquifer, last year the Nevada state engineer said that with careful watching, you know, if we were to pay close attention to this, impacts could be managed if the Southern Nevada Water Authority were to take water from this system, this aquifer system on the Utah-Nevada border. Is what the Southern Nevada Water Authority is trying to do from that area is to take water from a different section to also get to Las Vegas?
Well, they want to get water from all of these valleys, and it's the contention and concern of the eastern Nevada counties that, in fact, if they get their pipeline approved and built into White Pine County, which is where Snake Valley sits, and also Spring Valley, then they will eventually go further north into Elko County, perhaps to the Ruby Mountain marshes, perhaps to Steptoe Valley, maybe even to the Humboldt River, certainly to Railroad Valley. So once they build it, they're going to fill it, and they're going to seek water wherever they can find it, is the concern on the Nevada side.
But what about on the Utah side? What would the effect of pumping from the Nevada side be?
On the Utah side, our concern is that pumping in Spring Valley will deplete the water in the aquifer in Snake Valley. the ranchers in Snake Valley can show you where their own pumping has caused the springs and seeps to dry up in places, where the groundwater table has dropped significantly from pumping that is going on in the valley now, where that water is being used for growing alfalfa, and the water goes back onto the ground once it's pulled out of the ground in those wells and pumped, and it's sprayed onto the ground, and some of that water is lost to evaporation. Most of it's lost to the plants, which, of course, are then sold for feed. But there at least is a significant proportion of the water that is pulled out of the aquifer, is put back on the ground, goes back down into the aquifer. It's completely different when you pump that water out of the aquifer and export it through a pipe down to Las Vegas. None of that water is going back onto the ground to replenish the aquifer. If you're already drawing it down, then there's a problem with that. If you are also then depleting the recharge that's coming from Spring Valley, you've got a double dip already happening on a challenged aquifer where there's a long-term drought problem going on. And we just don't believe that there's enough water to fill that pipe and satisfy Las Vegas, that what they're doing in essence is taking a bet on a short-term fix for a problem that really is a long-term problem they need to address, and that this isn't going to solve it for them.
Finally, Steve, I kind of want to get a little bit more philosophical here and talk about water in the West in general. And maybe we can end on this note because we're running out of time. But the West is water-strapped. What do we do about it?
Well, that's the perfect question that is now before the citizens of the state of Utah. The Governor Herbert has created this new process leading to a water summit at the end of October. The public hearings will begin July 9th and go through the summer in several different cities and towns around the state. This is a real opportunity for citizens to weigh in on Utah's water future. It's our contention that we need to look at this as a region-wide problem, as a Colorado Basin-wide problem, and that we need to help Las Vegas solve its water future just as we need to secure ours here in Utah. We're all in this together. We're all dependent upon the Colorado River to a large extent in the urban areas of this region of the country. There needs to be some innovative thinking, some greater cooperation on the management of the river. We have some water shortages, but the real problem is we've got a shortage of good management practice happening right now. A management problem is what we need to solve first, and then we'll deal with the shortages as they come more intelligently. So, for instance, rather than building a pipeline to the desert to haul water that may or may not be there down to Las Vegas, we need to figure out a way to help Las Vegas get enough water out of the Colorado River to not have to take that alternative of the pipeline.
That's the Great Basin Water Network's Steve Erickson. We had to cut today's interview short for the program, but you can hear the full version online at kcpw.org. For a list of Governor Gary Herbert's public meetings on water in Utah, and to add your public comment on the state's water future, go to utahswater.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Salt Lake Arts Council's Casey Jarman talks about the upcoming Twilight Concert Series and the 26-year history of those concerts. That discussion and more coming up tomorrow on The Rundown here on KCPW. The Rundown was produced today by yours truly, with help from Lauren Colucci, Jesse Ellis, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us today for The Rundown from KCPW. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next. Stay tuned.